You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Agustin Ortiz Herrera. Agustin, thanks so much for being with me.
Oh, hello. Thank you so much to you.
So you're talking to me from Barcelona, of course, and tell me a little bit about what's happening now, what you're working on in your studio or a next project that's coming up.
Yeah, so actually what I'm working now is I'm trying to show a piece that I recently shot, because I'm working mostly with audiovisuals, so I'm making some sort of films. This is the piece that I've been working for a couple of years, and it is interesting because it's a very political piece, or it's a very political approach to memory. And actually, in my country, in Spain, there is a lot of things happening right now in terms of politics. It's kind of like a lot of turbulence, you might say. And my piece actually has a lot of things to do with that, with the history actually of the country and the recent history, the 20th century. So it's interesting because I'm trying just to show that piece in a very interesting moment as well. So basically that's what I'm doing. And also I'm working a new piece that is coming probably in a couple of years. So my projects are like sometimes like hard to, not hard, but they're like takes a long time to finish. So I'm starting research and then I'm finishing a project.
So I want to talk that. I want to talk about the specifics of those projects and the content. But let me ask you this: because you're in Spain and in Barcelona, how do you get funding for these projects? Is there funding there? Is it something that is available, or are you working other jobs to do this? How does the funding work for films like yours?
Right, that's a very key question. Well, mostly I'm paying my own projects. I'm working, and then I'm using part of the money to implement the plans and production, basically. But sometimes like this, here in Spain, you have like some open calls, like grants. Sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't. But I applied. Actually, I got one of them to do a residency in one of the what they call artist factory. It's basically some places around the urban area where like all factories became obsolete or empty, and then artists are taking over, and government are putting some money. So you have like some residents there, and this one, the one that helped me to finish this project, is called Angar, angar.org, and this place is you get there, they help you to finish the project you're working on. So yeah, this is a balance. It's like it's not so much funding, but some.
So let's talk about your work. I'd like to get into the films that you're making now and talk about the politics of Spain a little bit. But to talk about just your website. And your website, it opens. It's a kind of wonderful site, and it begins with a kind of short film, which is walking towards a camera and then kind of revealing, taking off glasses. Can you tell me a little bit about that short video?
Yes, of course. That's the project that I told you about the memory, the historical memory. Basically, this is a project that is very personal for me because even though I'm like a young artist, I'm not so young anymore. So that means like I started kind of late. I started filming actually in New York, and then I started fine arts in Stockholm. So that means like my career has been a bit different. However, I've always mixed my skills with film and my interest with fine art projects. So this one is very personal, as I said, because it starts with a memory. When I was 5 years old, the dictatorship that was ruling the country in Spain died. And for a long time, I've been like...
Hold on. So just to be clear, when you were born, Franco was dying or had died, just died?
Right. But yeah, when Franco died, I was just 5 years old. So it means like during 5 years, I was into a dictatorship. So for me, that managing or try to process this memory, it's been like an issue for, not an issue, but somehow like an interest for me, something that I wanted to bring on my work, and that was my way of doing it. So basically what happens with this character that is very queer character, is very ambiguous and also very countercultural. So it is actually a character that you can relate with punk, and especially in the 80s. And the 80s was an interesting time in Spain, because Franco died and then democracy started. So it seems like all these memories and issues, I just wanted to do a project that was getting involved all these. And I'm creating this is actually a performance that I proposed, but I couldn't make. It's a performance that I wanted to do in Franco's grave, or the mausoleum where he's actually still buried, what is actually kind of an anomaly in democracy, but he is still there. And I wanted to actually visit, or I wanted to command somebody to visit this grave, or this place, this mausoleum, what is actually huge. But I couldn't. It's actually forbidden. So I decided to create a fiction, and that actually relates a lot with my method, because that's a spoiler, but since like sometimes like I'm making films that looks like something, like a documentary or like a typical narrative film, they're not. I'm always like playing a game with this. That's my method. So it's the same. So here I'm trying to make a performance, and I'm creating fiction, because I couldn't make it actually. So that's it.
Okay, so let's talk about that more, because there's a number of things in here, right? And maybe we can address that through the film that you're making now. But there's, you know, ideology about queer culture. There's, you know, post-Franco Spain and current politics. Are all of those coming together in the project you're currently working on, the film you're currently working on?
Well, the project that I'm working on right now, it's a shift into that. Even though I'm going back to the queer theory or the queer concerns, the one that I just presented, or the one that I'm actually I'm making, or I'm trying to just make it visible. It is totally putting together all these issues that you mentioned. So, yeah, and actually, as I said, it's a coincidence that now the Spanish politics are convened. Also, they're like putting together ideas of looking back to the past, what we have done wrong, or what happens with politics nowadays, what's the connection with these with the politics today and the last century.
So let's talk about that. I mean, you know, that's a lot of material. I mean, I don't want to create spoilers here for your film, but how does that come together? Well, what does that looking back mean? Because that's also mirrors, you know, you looking back in that film we first talked about, the short film, and that there's a part of where you're looking back to memories, but also to Spain going through a pivotal time. And I would imagine, although I don't really know, but I had heard that Spain went through a kind of almost a sexual revolution the way the United States did in the 60s, because Spain didn't have the 60s the way it might have happened in other parts of Europe and in the United States. That happened more in the in the 70s and 80s. Is that part of what you're looking at, or is that even accurate?
Totally, totally. You're actually touching upon the key issue, because my thesis on this period, or also that what I'm trying to reflect with this project, is about what happened in the 80s, because before Franco, we couldn't have any process of liberation, sexual liberation, or even queer visibility whatsoever. It was totally forbidden. Actually, people died because they were homosexuals, or they were like part of the LGBT community. That doesn't mean that there was no community, but it was very, very suppressed. They were actually very hidden. But after Franco died, and after we had the constitution, we actually had a big shift. But my thesis is like, are we really processing all the history the way that it should be processed, or we just forgotten, or we just like jump into a new period without processing important issues? So that's kind of like the idea, because as you probably know, that in the 80s in Madrid, for example, was a big capital of contraculture. You can have demonstration in film, for example. You have Almodóvar, or in some other like filmmakers, they were actually very openly gay, for example, or they were like touching upon issues of religion in contrast with religion, in contrast with society. That actually, for example, other like artists did in the past, but they actually lit abroad because the dictatorship, like Dalí or some other the others that died because Federico García Lorca. So what happened is like in the 80s was like a big boom, big blast of freedom, and we as a city, that was my childhood. Well, not my childhood, when I was a teenager. So I felt like I was living in a free country, but still we're like some issues they're not dealt. Some issues they're still remaining there, and I realized that when I went to Germany, that actually went through, in the 20th century, went through a very catastrophic period, very similar to Spain with fascism. And then I realized how different they were approaching the history and memory.
You're talking about the history, how different Germany approached their own history and memory.
Yeah, exactly. So in Berlin, when I went to Berlin for first time in 2015, I realized how many museums there were there, how many memorials. They have different ways of approaching that painful, actually, period. But they're doing it. So in Spain, it seems like there's the other way around. It seems like they're using oblivion. They're using the opposite of memory. They're using, when I say they, I point out politicians, because I think there was like a lot of fear in society about talking about certain moments. So they were like decided to forget about it. So now my generation, my parents, they were part of the generation that lived in dictatorship mostly of their lives when they were young. But we are different. My generation needs to address these issues. We can't really look back and pretend that we don't see anything. So these two pieces are very political that way. So they're my kind of statements about these issues.
Sure. So in talking about some of those things, I mean, let's talk about just maybe queer politics, LGBTQ, evolution in Spain, because of course in the United States, during the so-called sexual revolution of the 60s, gay relationships weren't part of that, right? It was, it seemed everybody was free, but of course everybody wasn't. Women really didn't have nearly the same rights as they have now, weren't being weren't in, you know, galleries, museums, all kinds of things, and gay culture and queer culture was also not even part of the sexual revolution that was happening. Now there's more of that. That's in the last 10 years or so in the United States. Is it very different in Spain? You know, I mean, you know, you mentioned Almodovar and those kind of movements in the 80s, but was queer culture at all being addressed as part of that revolution, or was it left on the sidelines the way it was here, or worse?
I think as some of these revolutions came very late, and also the queer politics came into the discussion very late too, because there was a lot of fear anyway. But however, Spanish society is kind of very interesting because they managed to normalize, for example, gay marriage very, very fast. But the problem.
When did that happen? When did they normalize that? When did that happen?
The law was passed in 2005, pretty early actually. Because I mean, now in Europe it's very, very all over. But Spanish government managed to pass that law, and I was actually surprised. I was living in the States that time, and I remember. We were like going out to the streets in New York to claim changes, and actually in the States that changes came later. But the problem for me is not so much about the rights of that we can claim for LGBTQ community now. I think it's more about what happened in the past. And what happened in the past for me has an impact to the present. So and this is what is actually what I'm trying to address with this project.
And I mean, to talk a little bit also about how you were saying it was handled so differently in Berlin, in Germany, in terms of looking at the past as opposed to Spain. What do you see happening now? I mean, just to get current with what's happening in politics in Spain, in that idea of dealing with past memories, which you say is so different than the way Germany has. You know, I mean, I've recently seen, you know, statues of Franco being removed, things like that are happening here, but still in Spain, is there a kind of how is the past being dealt with now? Because it's still very different than you're saying, the way Germany deals with it. There's something not as confronting, right? Or something else.
Yeah, definitely. That's why I said it for me was a key point to go to Germany and understand how memory can be dealt with or can be actually addressed. Because it can be very painful. I'm not saying that the dictatorship was painful and the civil war was painful. Of course it is. But here we're living in a denial of these facts. And we're talking about 40 years of fascism in charge of a country. And it is very complex, of course. The first year they were not so... I mean, they were like very, very, very strong and very hard. But after that, after a few years, Spain was a bit more open. But still, it was a dictatorship in the heart of Europe. So, what happens right now is interesting. What you mentioned, because now politicians they're trying to do something. Like a few years ago, for instance, they pass a law. That they actually said, well, we need to remove all the Franco symbols, like statues and even institutions like street names. Imagine how, for example, how hard can be for a person that has been in jail by Franco's government, but they're living in a street named by him, for example, and this still. It still happens today. So what happens is like, well, they try to pass a law, but they don't have a budget for that law. So that means like, yeah, you can pass a law, but there's no money to make any changes. But now the new government, they want to show they are able to make a change, and they actually want to take Franco out of the monument where he is buried. He made a huge monument, actually. It's as big as the Vatican, inside a mountain, actually. Very few people know that, but it's like that. And this place.
Inside a mountain, yeah, I've never heard of that. So he built some massive
Yeah.
kind of mausoleum.
It is a massive mausoleum. He's very inspired in like Egyptian culture. So you go there and it's as big as a like a Egyptian temple. And actually they carved inside a mountain. They built up a cross outside. It's the biggest cross in Christianity. And then inside he's buried in a church. And he's actually having mass, a daily mass, because he wanted to. So this is
So
still happening.
that church is even still active in that mountain.
Yeah. Actually, there's like he put there like a congregation, like monks. They're living there, and they're doing this mass every day. So, and this
He
is like
was really wanted to set himself up for the afterlife or
totally.
something, right?
Yeah, but it's interesting because he actually is not the only one buried there. There's like 33,000 soldiers buried in that mountain, in that place. 33,000, because they went around the country digging into these general graves. They were like putting together the soldiers that they didn't know, not what they claimed, and they took take them off and they put people in massively into this mountain. So he wanted not just. He wanted to be there forever. So that's kind of like, it's a little bit complicated to take everybody out there. However, the
But
government
you,
wants.
but he could be taken out. In other words, he alone could be taken out, which is more the
Yeah,
issue,
but
not so much the soldiers, or maybe not.
exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's what the government is planning to do now. That's what I'm saying. It's so interesting that I'm finishing that project, and now 2 months ago, they just changed the government, and the socialists came into power, and then the first thing they say, okay, we want to Franco out of there. And of course, there's a big scandal. People are like, no, that's history. We cannot really do that. Of course, like, but they claim they're gonna do it, but Franco's family, they don't want him to go. And they say if they take them out of there, they're gonna put it in a cathedral in Madrid. Well, it's actually even worse because I don't know. It's a big complex. So, as I said, you know, this issue about historical memory is very controversial, very controversial. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of fascinating and quite an anecdote. So, well, I wish you great success with this film project that you're working on. How can people see this film? Once this is done, how can your work be seen by the
Right,
public?
in this project is finished. I'm just now trying just to reach some places to show it, like a little like film houses or things like that, or like museums. Because this film has like two sides, two parts, like the one that you were mentioned about this queer person visiting Franco's grave, but the other one is about a museum that it should be finished in a year, and it's a museum of the dictatorship. But remember,
What you said, a museum of the dictatorship? You mean it's a museum about Franco or about dictators in general? There's a museum being built like that?
it's a specific museum to reflect upon the dictatorship in Spain, the 40 years of dictatorship, like. Because there's nothing like that. For instance, in
Right.
Berlin, they have a museum called the Topography of Horrors, and they deal with the rise and successful of the national of the Nazis, how Nazis came into power and explains step by step what happens in the historical context, international and national, and all the problems that created. It's a fascinating museum in Berlin because it's actually built on the very center of the city. So as I said, remember I told you at the beginning that my films, they look like something, but they're not. So people might have a surprise when they see this film about this museum because, well, I no spoilers, probably you can figure out a bit for what I'm yeah. saying. But this is like, then, so your question is where? So in my website, they're open now. So it's going to be open for a while because I want people to be able to see it. So these two movies, they're like, one of them is called Oblivion. The other one is called long-term potentiation, and they're like placed in my website and in Vimeo. So one of them is 20 minutes, the other one is just 14, so they're not long. So that's a way people can
very good. And tell me what you're reading at the moment. I always ask everybody at the end, but I'm curious what you're reading.
Right. As I mentioned, there's one new project that is coming now. I'm making a research. It's actually because I lived in Sweden for a while, so I actually lived in Uppsala. It's the fourth biggest city in Sweden, and I learned a lot about a very important figure for science. It's called Carl von Linné. Linnaeus, and I'm reading about him a lot, but also in combination with that, I'm reading Donna Haraway, because his approach about natural history is fascinating. So my new project will be more about queer politics and science. So yeah. So this book, the book of Donna Haraway, is his last book, is Staying with the Trouble. Very interesting. I recommend it.
Hi, Lucien. Thank you so much for talking with me today. It's been a pleasure. I wish you great success with your work.
Yeah, thank you so much for this opportunity. Same to you with your program. It's fantastic.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.